Okay, tonight we're dealing with a class. Our class is how to lead your own Seder by yourself, and on some places it might be for yourself. Okay? I'm going to talk about a little bit sort of some of the strategy for tonight is as follows. We'll talk about sort of the general approach, and then I want to hear from you because we don't have infinite amount of time, so I want to hear from you specific issues. Okay, so we'll start with sort of a general overview, and then we'll talk about some of the details. Okay, all right. So let me begin. This year is different in many, many ways. And the biggest challenge for the Seder, in a certain sense, is not the Seder itself. Really, everybody to varying degrees is right now currently feeling down, anxious, and oftentimes alone. So what does that really add up to? That adds up to feeling a state of basically semi-depression. So what do you do when you're depressed? Well, you pretty much will want to go into your bed or on your couch and sort of roll up into a ball and not do much. So that's the biggest challenge if you're going to be doing it. Let's say you, because many of you, if not all of you, I will go as far as saying that there will be no family in America, Israel, or Europe who will be observing the Seder in the way they want to. They might just have their immediate family, but they can't invite their grandparents. They might have some family, but some family members are either quarantined or have underlying health issues, or they have to be in various kinds of quarantine, and as such, the family cannot be together. So instead of making a Pesach being a celebration where the family gets together, it makes them more sad. Okay. So that's the biggest challenge. I know in the MG community, people either will go home, either attend the MGE Sedarim, or will join sort of MGE families and join their Seder. Those are the three options. And to do it with, let's say, your roommate was never even a vague consideration. But now, so I want to reiterate this, and this is, I would say, the most important halacha I'm going to say tonight. The most important, say, more important halacha than even Pesach itself is ensuring your well-being and the well-being of your loved ones by not doing risky things, which is getting together with lots of people who should not, you know, it's very clear it is critical, the mitzvah of preserving life and preserving and reducing the spread of this horrible plague is more important than all the mitzvahs of Pesach. So when you are at home, and even if it's a Seder with your roommate, you are fulfilling the most important mitzvah, which is a celebration of the preservation of life. That's number one. Okay? So, in fact, let's say I got a call from an MGEer whose fam parents are elderly, and they want them to come home. And they say, they might even say in a command, for you must come home. We can't do the Seder without you. We don't want to be alone. There is no mitzvah of honoring your parents when it violates the principle of the mitzvah of taking care of their health and your health. So that's something to, you know, we like to have a Pesach like we like to have it, but we cannot compromise the basic principle of taking care of the health and well-being of ourselves and our loved ones and the whole community and the society and the world in general, okay? So that's the most important halacha. Number one, health trumps everything. Is that crystal clear? Okay? Because we all of us have, you know, would like to have the Seder with family and friends and everybody together. And it's great, and it's a fantastic thing, but we can't do that. Not this year. God willing, next year we will. This year, no. So that's point number one. I want to reiterate that. I want to be unequivocal. I want to be clear. Okay? But I want to speak to the fact that we're going through a difficult time. But that actually takes to the very essence of what really the Seder is all about. What are we really celebrating on Pesach night? The Rambam tells us that the matzah, you know, in the Rabbi Gamliel would say, we talk about three mitzvot. Pesach, matzah, and maror. The Passover offering, the matzah, and the maror. And what does the matzah celebrate, bring to mind? The redemption. That God revealed himself to the Jewish people and said, it's time to go. And the Rambam adds one word which is not found in the standard Haggadah. He says that Hashem revealed himself. I'm just going to read you the Hebrew just for a moment. Revealed himself suddenly to the Jewish people. I'm going to read you the Hebrew just to get it nice and clear. He says, Matzah Dushanu Ochlam Al Shema, this matzah that we're eating, for what sake, for what purpose? Al Shem Shlo Hispik Betsekam Lavotenu Lachmitz, that our forefathers did not allow, as you guys all know, allow it to become leavened. Should Nigla Leah Melch Machem Lachim Akash Baruchu, until God revealed himself, the King of Kings, Ugeolam, and redeemed them, one word, miyat, immediately. The key thing is that redemption is immediate. I don't know about you, but beginning of this month, even before...
Your internet connection is pretty bad. You're freezing up.
Okay.
Yeah, Rob, I'm having the same trouble. The connection cuts out.
All right. Okay, I'm sorry. So, I don't know. All right. The problem is I have a lot of people in the house on a lot of devices. So. I got five people on another Zoom call elsewhere. So, I don't know. On another account. Anyway, so it's part of the challenge of everybody's at home. All right, we'll get through this. All right. So, the main point is that just a second. Well, give me a second here. Let me get some good lighting here. The main thing is that a month ago, the market hit nearly 30,000 points. It literally was the zenith of the economy. And then it went down literally 10,000 points in a moment. And on Purim, we say, Vanafochu, everything switched around. Now, on Purim, we say it went switched around from complete depression and fear and trepidation from the onslaught of the anti-Semites led by Haman. And then in one day, everything switched around. So that really is what we're celebrating, and God willing, will happen to us, the Jewish people, now. That as quickly as it comes, it can also go very quickly. In other words, that the redemptive process of God does not operate based upon the slow, step-by-step feature of the laws of nature. The laws of nature is a slow, orderly progression. When God does a redemption, it's keheref, Yeshua Tashem, keheref ayin. The salvation of God is like a blink of the eye. So just as we've had this sort of tremendous epidemic, pandemic, world challenge, which we have suffered from, God willing, in the same way that there was a redemption in Egypt, we, the Jewish people, will have a redemption equally as speedy and unnaturally quick as it was in the time of Egypt. So that's a key point, and that's, I think, the key principle we want to talk about throughout the Seder, about the God's involvement and overriding the natural, orderly, and many times slow process of the natural order, and overrides and supersedes and supercharges the process. So that's a key thing to remember when we feel a little bit down about the situation. So I right now want to shift some, for those people, many of you who are on the call, when it was Pesach, basically what was your preparation for the Seder? What was your preparation? What did you do for the Seder? Anybody, does somebody want to share what did you on a typical year, what did you do in preparing for the Seder?
Throw away my bread and show up.
That's it. Pretty much somebody else did the hard work of organizing their home and organizing their kitchen to produce kosher Passover food, cooked and prepared for many days delicious food, shopped, ordered everything. You walk into a dining room. It's Martha Stewart gorgeous. Beautiful plates, silverware, cups, everything. Everybody's got a matching Haggadah around the table. And you were just shown where to sit down. That's how you prepared for the Seder. You literally, all you did was you sat down. Okay? Now, for many of you this year, that really is not an option. I mean, unless you're lucky, but typically, you might be, and I don't want to call it everybody's situation, but you might be doing this with one or two other people, and therefore, being that we have to give ourselves permission that we're not feeling awesome right now. I don't think anybody who's really honest with themselves, we've been cooped up for a week or 10 days, depending on your circumstance. You're just like, you're stressed out. People's industries, whatever industry you're in, is not the same as it was 10 days ago. It's an extremely stressful time. So this is what I'm sharing with you on a practical point, is that you have to sort of like dress and act the part. Part of us wants to be in our sweats and sit on the couch with a little Haggadah and a glass of wine, and call it a night. Okay? Now, I understand that. But you want to really work backwards and say, I want to make this Seder the best experience that I can make it. So the key point is, because I really have no energy and I only want to push myself to do it, I know that when I sit down to that said table, I will feel better about it, I will be energized about it, and I'll be able to be more effective with it. Okay?
Can you go back to...
Yes, Mendel?
We didn't hear any of that.
Oh, okay.
We didn't hear any of what you just said.
Okay. Thank you for telling me that.
The last thing I heard was that we want to make it the best experience we possibly can. I didn't hear anything after.
So, which means is that even though right now you may not have a lot of energy to, go shopping, order the food, buy a number of Haggadot, get wines, do the things necessary to pull off a nice Seder because you're just not feeling good right now. So the point is, you just have to remind yourself is that I know I don't feel like it. I don't feel in the mood right now, but when I come in and it's, 7:45 on Wednesday night, 8 o'clock on Wednesday night, April the 6th, and I'm dressed, even though I have not left the house except for going to the store, in a nice, Yom Tov clothing, a suit, fully dressed, even though I'm not going to go to shul because there is no shul to go to, I will feel better about the experience. I will take it seriously. I'll feel more energized. Okay? Now, this is a turning lemons into lemonade experience. Because like everything else in life, we grow through challenge. So right now, you have to make a list tomorrow of all the things you need to pull off a Seder in your apartment. Okay? Now, fortunately, and I think MG sent out an email blast, and I'm happy to forward it to this group again if you didn't get it, which is basically listing, you know, if you want to throw a lot of money at the problem, you don't have to lift a finger. There are caterers who will basically deliver, as they call it, Pesach in a box. The end. Set it and forget it. Okay? Okay? So you could do that. There's also a special offer with MGE to get a nice Haggadah for $5. It's a sweet Haggadah. It tells you what to do step by step. So I'm going to send that out to my list because some people have maybe, you know, as they've sort of graduate out of MG, did not want to get email blasted and has sort of signed off the MG, shall we say, persistent email blasting. So you may not have gotten that email. I'm going to forward it to everybody because it has a lot of good information if you were in the New York City and beyond. Okay, so that's point number one. So you have to know that whatever Seder that you've gone to in the past, whether it was moms and dads, whether it was in-laws, whether it was your brothers, your sisters, whether it was another family, whether it was the Waxmans, whether it was the Rosenthals, whether it was the Weil, whoever it was, a lot went in to make that happen. And you need to plan that in advance. You need to make yourself a menu, what you want to eat. You want to break down what is on a Seder plate. You don't need a Seder plate. You know, it could be on the table. It could be in individual bowls. It doesn't have to be a nice Seder plate, but it's nice if you can have a Seder plate. And also part to lift yourself up. If you appreciate wine, you don't have to leave your apartment. Kosherwine.com, many wine stores will deliver to you. And pick a bottle or two of wine that you really, really enjoy to celebrate Pesach with. You know what I mean? Do things to make the experience pleasant. Now, an idea that's been zipping around the internet, which is a great idea, I want to share with you just in case you missed it. Many, in order to deal with the fact that we're going to be separated with our family and loved ones, many people are doing as follows. They're doing sort of like a pre-Seder Zoom get-together. Like a little, whether it be a little mini-Seder, whether that includes, let's say, grandparents, or friends and family and friends, and they might do some parts of the Haggadah. They might sing. You might sing a Dayenu. Allow the kid who has been practicing Manish Tana, your little nephew or your niece, to sing the Manish Tana, and you can enjoy that, and sing some of the songs that many families have enjoyed literally for decades. So to do that, set that up at 6 o'clock in the afternoon on Wednesday afternoon. Have an hour, a schmooze, a cup of coffee. You know what I mean? And have opportunities to sing and schmooze everybody and get that sense of family togetherness, which you're not going to be able to have on the Seder itself. Is that part clear? Questions?
Actually, Rabbi, I just wanted to answer that. This is Marvin here. I had read in Israel National News there were a group of rabbis, and I believe they're relatively respected rabbis in Israel, who have made an emergency determination that I think it was more geared towards elderly. I didn't have a translation of their actual proclamation, that if you open up Zoom conferencing before the holiday begins, that you would be allowed to use that type of portal to actually share in your Seder and your location with other people. And it was intended basically under the emergency circumstances. Have you heard about that?
Yes, that has been very controversial. And as since that, some of those rabbis have retracted. Here's the situation. The answer is, Marvin, it depends. There are people in the Jewish community that are suffering with issues of depression or necessarily fully clinical or just, you know, issues like that. And the fact that they're in quarantine or social distancing from family and friends, and we're going into not just a one-day yontif like they do in Israel, we, outside the land of Israel, are going to be having a three-day, what they call a three-day yontif. Wednesday into Thursday, Thursday night into Friday, and then we have Shabbat. So that's 3 days of isolation. That's rough. So if there's any question about the fact of a person is, having real issues like that, which of a clinical or a medical thing, yes, then to have a Zoom set up, put before Shabbos in both locations, would be a credible dispensation according to everybody. If it's not as extreme like that, but it's just very persistent, would be better to avoid, this is what Rabbi Herschel Schachter mentioned, to do it, just have the phone on, you know, just, you know, either having a non-Jew turn on the phone or have the phone on both locations during the time. But by and large, if a person could do the Seder properly and they'll be a little sad, that's not a dispensation to, you know, according to the vast majority of authorities, to violate the rabbinic laws involved in a video conference call on Shabbos. So that's
kind of what I figured. Again, the only thing I saw in the translation was something talking about like elderly or maybe
right, but apparently my point being, it's not a, you know, unless if the person is going to feel just down about the situation, that would not allow a dispensation to use a Zoom for the Seder. Their position is not, I would call, normative, not the majority opinion. If there's a much more extreme need, yes. And if it's sort of a concerning situation of elderly people, then to keep the phone on is a less of a violation, and that could be done. But Marvin, I'm glad that you brought that up. But it brings to the issue that this is causing lots of people lots of anxiety because it's a tough situation. So I want to, that's why the biggest challenge here is not Pesach in the sense of really our internal world. You know what I'm saying? Because when you feel down and you feel in the dumps and you feel depressed, you don't feel like doing anything. So it's going to take a lot of energy to have, to get yourself to do a Seder. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. So that's point number one. Now, let's get to some of the practical elements of what you need to run your own Seder, assuming it's just maybe, I'm going to do like the average case. Let's say it's one or two people in an apartment situation in New York. That's like the classic MG. I'm going by the average, and then you'll ask me questions specifically. It applies also if you're doing it by yourself. Okay. This is what you need to do. Obviously, you got, of course, even if it's a regular year, you got to clean your home. But again, not spring cleaning. Clean your home so you can do a bedika. Okay, you don't go crazy with cleaning. You need to kosher your kitchen. I will send as well the easy step-by-step MG version of how to kosher your stove, your countertops, and your sink. Done. Okay, it's not overwhelming. Next. Then you got to do the shopping. Now, you could solve this in other ways. Obviously, you want to throw a lot of money at it, you can get everything catered. You know, you can just heat it up, heat and eat, okay? If you want to get the stuff, so then you deal in the same way you're buying supplies now. The good news is that there is adequate kosher for Passover supplies in the New York, New Jersey area. Now, this is itself a little tricky. All the kosher stores are going to be jammed. Now that, of course, you got to use great care because you don't want to go to kosher marketplace on the Upper West Side and get yourself, you know, the coronavirus. Okay? So you need to be extremely careful. You got to figure out, you know, this. I'm not a doctor, but these are the things that are being reported. You want to find a time when there's less people. If they're still doing deliveries, I doubt it. But if you can get a delivery, sweet. Otherwise, you go in there, you take rubber gloves, you get a mask, you go in there, you get, you know, better yet, if they'll do the shopping, you pick it up, the best. And you go to the place where you get the stuff, wherever. And there's all kinds of ways to solve that problem. I don't have great insights in shopping. Some people are, you know, non-perishable things they're putting in a room or a closet for a day to make sure if there's any virus will die. Perishables are just washing off with soap. You're good to go. Then you got to cook for the Yontif. You got to cook for Yontif. Okay? And you got to figure out what you're going to eat. There is an Ashkenazim more strict about not having purely roasted meat. Has to have some sort of liquid in it, not to duplicate like we're having the Passover offering. You may not have been aware of that. You need to have wine for four glasses. The glass size should be at least 4 ounces. make it something which is able to be done. And you need to have matzah. Another thing that was brought out. Ideally, we like to have what they call shmura matzah. Matzah that whose grain was washed could not come in contact with water from the time of harvesting. That's called the shmura. And there's two varieties. There's the handmade. That's the $30 a pound variety. Costco, you can get it for $12, but New York prices, $35, you know. Or you can get machine shmura matzah. In other words, it's the flour has been washed since the time of harvesting, but it's made by a machine. Actually, Rabbi Soloveitchik preferred that because it's produced quicker and less chance of becoming leavened. You need to buy that in advance. But let's say you can't get access to that. All you got is your standard strites, what they call the 18-minute matzah. Okay, it's not ideal. Okay, this year's not ideal. So therefore, you have to give yourself permission in the following thing. This is not going to be perfect. We're trying to get on base. This is, you're looking to get, to using the baseball metaphor, you're trying for a single. Okay? This is not the home run. This is not going to be a table decorated like Martha Stewart, like a good normal year. You might have to use disposable plastic stuff. You want to have it as nice as you can, but you don't have to kill yourself. And if it means going less shopping, that's a more smarter move. And obviously, as what has become our friend over this entire being sequestered in our homes has been Amazon. Amazon basically has a huge amount of supplies, plus everything, delivery. So every Haggadah that you can imagine available and could be Amazon Prime to your house in 3 days. Okay?
Rabbi, can I ask a question about deliveries? I'm really curious about this.
Yep.
What is the halakha on, okay, we're afraid to go out and buy these things because of the contagion, especially in Manhattan. But is it right to make a delivery person do this? I understand for food or medical essentials, but for other things, should I go myself? Should I order it even if it's unavailable? Let's say it's available. What is the ethical thing to do? It's such a strange time now where I think of ordering something on Amazon that's not essential.
So that's a good question. So
even food, even takeout.
Right. So what I'm hearing, again, I don't want to say a medical point, but what I've heard is that cardboard boxes, if there is any possible corona, it does not last long at all on these boxes. So just getting boxes, that's not where you're going to pick up the virus. Well, you're going to pick up the virus by going into a store, touching the handrails of the cart, touching the various metal surface areas throughout the supermarket. That's where the coronavirus can last for a long time. But I understand, my understanding is that boxes themselves are not, they don't last a long time. So
I think what Daphne's asking is more about putting other people in harm's way. I do have one experience with it, but I asked the lady at the grocery store how she's doing, who was checking me out, and she goes, I'm just really happy I have a job and that we're still open. So that was her specific reaction. Obviously, that's one person, but you could look at it that way, right?
Right. So.
Right, but I just feel now ordering something on Amazon that isn't something, I mean, even food, I'm good for another week, 2 weeks even, but is it ethical right now to order things that aren't necessary for survival?
So
some delivery person's life at risk.
Right. So I don't know the key. So obviously, if it's very risky, they will not be doing it. In other words, it's a good question. So I think things which are not, things that you don't know where it's not, books and general chazarai that we buy on Amazon if there is a risk. But I think that when you're dealing with things that are boxed, individual boxed things, I'm not sure there is such a great risk. You know what I'm saying? But if it is a risk, yeah, you're not allowed to. On the other hand, it's a good question.
I mean, if everybody's it was just the Instacart people who were going to the grocery store for your groceries, it might actually be safer. But the fact
that they're still out
of the grocery store, I don't know, it makes it more dangerous.
Yeah, if there was a regulation like that, I would be all for it. But if it's the delivery person and crowds of people, I mean, if one delivery person takes the place of 100 people in a grocery store, that's good. But there's no rules. I mean,
right. So
yeah.
So Daphne's a good question. So I think, look, in this time, just to buy the essentials. So I think that's certainly justified. And look, there's a whole group of people who are hourly workers who view the following calculation. If I don't go to work, I don't have any money, I'm going to be in tremendous distress. I can't even put food on my own table versus the remote chance I get the virus and the remote chance that that's actually going to cause me a serious medical concern. You know what I mean? That's how many of those people are looking at it. You know what I'm saying? I'd rather take a remote risk versus a definite problem of not having any money whatsoever. So you're right. So as Casey's saying, you can be helping them out because they're happy to have a job. So it's a good question. I have to give it some more thought. It's a good question. So
I think
Marvin.
Having delivery is actually safer for everybody. I actually have formal training in the public health arena, and actually Dr. Fauci's division at NIH used to be a customer of mine years ago, and I used to work at virus labs and folks like that. So I've basically told some of my neighbors where I am that the best thing to do is to order online, because if everything's being done at the store and brought to you, that's better than lots of people crowding into the stores and potentially giving the virus to the workers, to fellow shoppers, et cetera. So I've been, really since February, I have been avoiding, like the local, I don't know if they're in Rockland County, so the supermarkets in Monte, I've been avoiding totally all this time. I'm trying to see if I can get an order together and get it delivered still, but there may be even some problems with that. We'll see what happens in the next few days.
Okay. All right,
I also heard that if you're ultra concerned, you can wipe down all the products with baby wipes or the Clorox wipes.
Right.
That, and you can also, if you happen to have a place where you can leave it out in the sun, if they're non-perishable items, leaving in the sun, the UV rays will kill the viruses as well, and then I'd still wipe it down anyway.
Okay. All right, let's continue here. All right, now I want to bring up something which is very practical. And I know this is going to sound a little strange, but I want to share with you minimally. Again, I'm starting from ground up. Let's say you just don't got that much gas in the tank. Okay? All right? So what would be the minimal amount that you need to do to fulfill the basic mitzvahs of the Seder? Okay? I'm not encouraging a 31-minute Seder. But I'm just saying, I want you to know what you got to do to basically, as they say, get on base. And the more you do, the better it is, okay? So the first thing you got to do is you got to start at the right time, which is at when three stars come out, which is, let me just, I'm going to do for the Seder, is going to be... April 8th, rather. I'm sorry. Okay, so the Seder, sunset's 4:27. Nightfall is 8:09 here in New York, around 8:10. So you want to start the Seder about 8:10. In other words, the Seder mean Kiddush. Now, if you have people earlier, you could do songs beforehand. You know, you could just chill out. Many times when MGers typically go to their family, they want to start the Seder at 6. Because that's the normal time to have dinner. But it's not, the only problem with that is it's not the date on the calendar. The Jewish calendar starts at night. Nightfall is when three stars come out. Three stars come out around 8:10 in the New York, New Jersey area, roughly. So you got to start your Kiddush, which is also your first cup. Okay? You have there two biblical mitzvahs. What are the two biblical mitzvahs you want to fulfill on the Seder night?
Tell the story of
one.
The past of Exodus.
Yes, it's one. And? What's the second biblical mitzvah that you're fulfilling on the Seder night?
You matzah.
Eating matzah. Are men and women equally obligated to eat matzah?
Yes.
Yes, they are. Now, let me tell you sort of the history of how our Seder developed. It was that there were basically, there was the Passover offering, there was telling the story, okay? And it was done by the temple, in the Beit HaMikdash. All right? Now, during the second period, the second temple time, the rabbis structured, they took, let's call it, the best practices of the time, and they created literally a Seder, a structure, an order. That's what the Seder means, an order. Okay? And they added a number of rabbinic mitzvot. What are some other rabbinic mitzvot they added? Having four cups.
No, everything else, no? Everything except the two...
They added the four cups. But not only they had the four cups, they said, and when you do your drinking of the four cups and eating of the matzah, what position will you be in?
Reclining.
In other words, because at that time, how did the aristocratic Greek and Romans dine? How did they dine? Anybody seen like one of those, you know, Greek and Roman movies? How do they eat?
They got a couch and they were being fed grapes or something?
Well, that's the person's, emperor. But basically, they'd be on couches around the room, and in front of the couch, they'd have a table. And they would be brought by their servants various courses. And they would dine. So basically, what did the Chachamim do? They said very simple. We're going to take the structure of an aristocratic meal and make it our celebration of our freedom. Okay? There's a mitzvah of Kiddush, which is every Yom Tov, which is actually rabbinic. Only on Shabbos is there a biblical obligation of Kiddush. And you're going to be reclining. And you're going to take the various chunks of the Seder and you're going to make it a toast. Kiddush is a toast. The telling over the story over a glass of wine, culminating with the praising of God on that, over a glass of wine. Having the meal and then the benching, over a glass of wine. That's number three. And then saying the Hallel, the praising of God, the singing God's praises, over a glass of wine. Those are four glasses. Whenever you do it, you're reclining, okay? Not only that, they said, we want some things on the table. We want some things on the table. What do they mandate to be on the table, the rabbis?
The Seder plate.
Well, the Seder plate's not later, but what do they have? What do they add initially as going to be something that you're... I'm going to give you a hint to dip.
Is it the cup of Elijah?
No, that's later. It's way later. Well, you have to have all your stuff on your table. You have to have your maror, right? Now, and then you could have, there's a variety of things you can choose from. We typically use romaine lettuce or use grated horseradish. Not the ones which come in the jar because those will have vinegar in it. Then you don't fill the mitzvah with that. But they had charoset. You know, Ashkenazim have it, the chopped apples and nuts, etc. Sephardim have it. Yeah, they have the Sephardim have a different variety, basically ground dates and honey, dates, wine, and raisins. Okay, it's a different consistency. All right, and that's it. And they would and they also had that dipping. And they said you have to organize a story in a certain way. You have to start off with our lowly start, that either we were idolaters or that we were slaves, and then we got redeemed and we were redeemed and brought to service of Hashem. So we have to narrate the story in a couple of ways. Start about our sad beginnings and end with a crescendo of our glorious end. Okay, that's one way of structuring it. Two, we also want you to do it using some of the Torah Sheval Peh. You're going to take the four verses from Deuteronomy that sort of shrink down the entire story of the Exodus, and you're going to, each word, you're going to read some of the oral law commentary on it. And then, not only that, Reagan Lewis says, you know what you got to do? You got to discuss the story through the prism of the three mitzvos, Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. Okay? And Maror, which was really a mitzvah, which is part of eating it together with the Passover offering. Now we don't have a Passover offering. They said, the rabbi says, we're going to keep Maror on board as a separate mitzvah, and that's a rabbinic mitzvah. Okay? So they basically took, which was much more a free-flowing thing, they added some structure to it, at an order. Okay? And that was the basic parts of what we call the text of the Haggadah. And then since the time of the Mishnah, different component parts have been added in. Okay? That's your basic structure. Oh, so if that's the basic structure, what do I got to do? So I got to, A, drink the first cup. Nice to say, Man Shana and Avadim Ayinu. I could then skip, boop, all the way to, if I want to say about the, my father was a wandering Aramean, or, you know, Vahisha Amda, the promise that has stood by our forefathers, and then go from that point to the end till Matzah, which is the Tzeil Amad, go find, you know, what happened to my father's wandering Aramean. The very a non-negotiable, Rabbi Gamliel would used to say. So it's basically the part. I'm going to do a share screen. Do a little share screen. Here we go, guys. Okay, one second. Nice. My share screen is not working. This is, wow, this is, one second, hold on. That is great. This is the first time ever I've had a no share screen. It does not work. Great. Okay, I cannot share the screen. This is really disappointing here.
Is it in the email you sent us? One of us can share the screen. I'm happy to share mine.
I'm gonna do the old share the link in the chat.
That works. Do you want me to share my screen now that you've shared it? So
yeah.
Along? Okay.
Okay. There, I got the link. I just said it in the
end. Let me get onto it. Still here.
Only if you have the chat. Only if you have the actual video. You have the chat. I'll talk it out.
I'll share my screen now.
Okay, great. Okay. So, hit Magid. See where the Magid section, which is telling of the story? Beautiful. Now, so the Halach Manya, again, obviously you want to do everything, but if you're just not up to it, okay, you just do the old, make a Kiddush, divide the matzah, you know, Kaddish Urchas, you can wash your hands, eat the karpas, the Magid, you could just go the Halach Manya, four questions, we were slaves, then skip all the way down to, in the beginning, our fathers were idol worshippers, and then go all the way there to Rabbi Gamliel, and then through the first part of the Hallel, you know, to the end, to the end of the Magid section. If you were just reading English straight out loud, we're talking 12 minutes there. Then you wash your hands for the matzah. You recline, have a kazayit of matzah. How much is a kazayit of matzah? Who wants to tell me?
Well,
kazayit means literally an olive bulb.
4 ounces.
4 ounces and more. Okay, that's a lot. So, there's a whole, I don't want to go into the whole debate about why there's a question about what olives is, you know, the volume of an olive. It's a whole why that is your question.
Didn't they say, like, olives back then were, like...
Okay, there's a whole question about the olive issue. I just want to get into the bottom line here. Is that basically, if you have the handmade matzah, if you eat a fifth of that, your yotzeh, you want to eat more, great. But try to go for a fifth of that. If you have a regular machine-made matzah, try to go for a third. If you want to go a little more, great. And your yotzeh. And when you eat, you got to recline. You got to lean to your left when you eat it. If you don't lean to your left and you eat the matzah, what do you got to do?
Do it again.
Do it again, because they said you're not doing eating, you're doing aristocratic eating, okay? Now, then you're going to have the maror, which is about, you know, two large pieces of, leaves of your romaine lettuce. Then you're going to take another kazayit matzah and make a, and of course you dip the maror in the charoset. Again, you deal the two, take another kazayit, make the korech, and dip it in. You read, follow the Haggadah. In other words, all the Haggadahs have, you know, follow your instructions. Then you got your meal. And then before Chatzot, which is midnight, which in the New York area is 12:54, around there, you want to eat your, what you call your afikomen, okay? Your third piece of matzah, another kazayit. Then you're going to lift your glass up, have your third, you're going to bench over it, your third glass of wine, pour a new glass of wine, you're going to say your Hallel, and you're done. You don't even have to say Nirtza. Nirtza is an Ashkenazic addition. You don't have to say it, but it has all the songs. People love the songs. Do the songs. Okay? So if you really just want to do a minimalistic Seder, and I'm not, okay, we're in the no, we're in the, because again, I want everybody to be in the no judgment zone here, okay? So, Casey, you can stop the share screen. Thank you. So that whole Seder could be 30, 40 minutes. Now, that's okay. So, because you want to basically do the basic mitzvos. Okay, now let's talk about adding on. Okay, adding on is, here's a key thing. The best Seder is the prepared for Seder. So let's say it's you and your roommate. Let's just imagine that for a moment. It's you and your roommate, okay? You would want to take the Haggadah, and or get a bunch of Haggadahs, and some of a lot of stuff is online, and say, What do you want to talk about or introduce at the Seder? And let them prepare a little piece. And you prepare, you know, divide up the Seder. And each person sort of prepares in advance. In other words, preparing for the Seder shouldn't be beyond cooking the food. That's important. Food is important. And getting the matzah, and getting the maror, and getting the wine, and getting the nice plates, and getting a tablecloth, and getting, but you want to actually have it in it. You want it to be an intellectually stimulating experience. Another part, for most people, the songs are critical. They really bring the joy of the holiday. Let's say you're not that well versed on the songs. So all the songs are available for you for free on YouTube. Okay? You could just, there's the Kaddish Urchat song, there's the Manishtana song, there's the Dayenu song. There's the Hisha Amda, a couple of versions. You know, you want to, whatever you put in, it will be better. And I want to share with you, one of the best siddurim I had was just me and my wife. Our first son, Eliyahu, was very little. And one of the two nights of this of Pesach, we couldn't, it was too hard for the little baby to go out to my parents' house. We went one time, and little Eliyahu was like this big. And we put him on the table in the little chair. But it was just too hard, and he had to go to sleep and cranky, whatever. So we did a Seder for two. And quite frankly, it was very pleasant. Nice conversation. And you'll be, just because it's small, don't mean it bad. And you might be shocked. And again, I want to go back to the other principle. The fact that you will learn what it takes to plan, shop, cook, prepare, present, and execute a meaningful Seder experience, I will guarantee you, you will grow from. And one benefit for being outside the land of Israel is that if it was a little bit chunky or not smooth or not awesome on night one, you got night two. So you could, there's a matinee and there's a final, there's another showing. So you get two bites at the apple. So that's all I want to present, and I want to open up any question you want about the Seder. Okay, you know, that's the basic information I wanted to share tonight. Go ahead.
What was the thing you said about, like, the difference between, like, maror and just horseradish?
Okay, so many times people who are not, they will use the red horseradish, which is now, that it has three ingredients. That's grated horseradish, it is beets, and it has vinegar. So if maror is in a is pickled, it's not halachically not good to be used for maror. It has to be straight on a, you know, can't be, it has to be the straight stuff. So either A, the romaine lettuce, or people like to use endive, Belgian endive, or you use the grated horseradish straight up. But the red horseradish, which is kosher for, you know, which is kosher for Passover, you'll save it for the gefilte fish if you're having an Ashkenazic style dinner. Should not be used to fulfill the mitzvah of a kazayit of maror. Good question, Scott.
I still remember the maror challenge from the mock seder.
That's right. That's it.
That was the most pain I've ever been in.
All right. That's it. Any other questions about the seder? Anything about preparation?
The shank bone obligation for Okay,
so as Mendel pointed, as you open, that's why it's good to get a you go online, get a picture of the Seder plate. The Ashkenazic Seder plate has an egg, which is roasted, and a shank bone, which is roasted. One is for to represent or give an allusion to a Passover offering. We don't eat it, and also the festival offering. Now, if you can't get that, the Rambam had a different idea, which is easier to do. He had two kinds of meat. So you could have, you know, piece of brisket in one little bowl and a piece of corned beef in another bowl, and you would also fulfill that thing. I don't know where it's coming from. All right. So, so you can use that, you know, but if you can get a shank bone, which is kosher store sell, basically it's the neck of a chicken, you put it in an oven for, 5 to 10 minutes, you know, on 450, and you got yourself a roasted shank bone. Any questions?
But you could also do two different kinds of meat.
Yeah. You could use the Rambam's, the thing. Okay.
So
you got, in other words, you got to have the maror on the table, you got to have the matzah on the table, you got to have the charoset on the table, and you got to have the two kind, you know, one for the commemorating the two things. And that's the basic. There are different kinds of Seder plates, different communities had different things on the table. Those are your basic requirements. You have to have the matzah on the table, you got to have your charoset on the table. I'll share, maybe I'll do a follow-up email, some helpful things. Great recipes for charoset on YouTube. Delicious stuff. That stuff is delicious. You want to eat it all the time. That's it. So that's the basic thing. Any other questions?
Your four pieces of matzah, do they have to be separated? Or they're four on top of each other? The one you break...
We have three. Ashkenazim use three. We have three matzahs. And in fact, it's a tradition is to call the matzah by... One is representing Kohen, one is representing Levi, one is Israel, like the three kinds of Jews. All right, we have three matzahs. We take the middle matzah, we break it, and then we take the larger one, we put it away for the Afikomen. We take the little smaller piece, we stick it out of the matzah, and that's the matzah that we have there to talk about the whole Exodus, the story. Okay.
Those three don't need to be separated. I've seen special matzah.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be, but, you know, that's... Okay. Now, historically, since the Seder is the Super Bowl of the Jewish year, in the, what sense? That it's the night where the tradition is passed on from one generation to the other. That's why we encourage the children. We want to keep the kids up. We give them candy. We want them to ask questions. You know, we obviously if they went to school, we let them to share what they learned. We want them to be engaged because it's an opportunity to share our core values. What are our core values? That God has a covenant with the Jewish people. That we were incarcerated in Egypt. And through the miracles and with Moshe, we were liberated. That's what we want to teach the kids. And therefore, if you have kids, you want to make games and you want to dress up. And those are my other, in our more, when we actually got to be in the same room, you saw some of the things that I do. We'll have a little lamb. We'll have candies. We do all kinds of fun things to engage the children. But I'm assuming that the Siddharma that you're going to have is not, unless you're going to, is going to not be with kids primarily. If you are, then you want to engage them, obviously. Any questions?
For the second night, preparations for the Seder, can you just go over like how, like not supposed to do any preparations for the second Seder until like nightfall, or how does that work?
That you just said it beautifully. As you may or may, in other words, you cannot on Shabbat and on Yom Tov in general, you cannot prepare on the Yom Tov or Shabbos for after Shabbos and Yom Tov. Now remember, second day of Yom Tov is a lower level of holiness. The first day of Yom Tov is on a biblical level. Thursday night into Friday is a rabbinic level. In fact, in Israel, they don't do the second day of a thing. So therefore, you can't set your table up on the Seder before 8:10. You can't do any of your preparation before you can start the Seder. So that makes the second Seder start later because you got to set the table. If you have food, you may want to heat it up. You want to be making it, you know, and that's that. So it starts a little later. But that's exactly the halakha there, Sean.
And what about the next night going into like Shabbos?
So before that, I'm glad you brought that up. Before the entire holiday, we call an Erev Tavshilin. And Erev Tavshilin is making a declaration that I'm designating this meal, which is typically a matzah and an egg, a minimalistic meal. And I'm saying that I'm designating this as being a sign that I'm allowing me to prepare from Yom Tov to the higher Kedusha, the higher holiness level of Shabbat. Now, biblically, you can always do that, but what were they afraid of? That people would say, if I can cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos, I might make the mistake of cooking from Yom Tov for weekday. So we do this Erev Tavshilin, which is a rabbinically mandated demonstration, just, you know, making that I've now separating this meal, this food, to allow me, if I make a special siman, a special sign, which reminds me that this is special, that I'm allowed to go up and home, I can cook from Yom Tov for Shabbat. If I don't do that, then I'm not technically allowed to cook. Typically, the rabbi will make a Erev Tavshilin for everybody, but everybody should endeavor to make their own Erev Tavshilin on that Wednesday afternoon.
Got it, okay.
Do you have to actually eat any of that food from Erev Tavshilin?
That's an excellent question. You guys are rocking out here. The practice is to try to eat it on Shabbat. If it gets lost or eaten on before and doesn't make it to Shabbos, then there's a whole problem whether or not you can cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos. So you want to preserve it. You want to make sure it lasts until Shabbos. Now, how to do it is all in your Art Scroll Siddur that we gave you guys in the Koran Art Scroll Siddur. It's very simple. And you just read it in English, and you're good to go. But you want to do that on Wednesday.
And I obviously said you can do an egg and matzah.
One egg, yeah, an egg and a matzah. No, cooked egg and a matzah.
What can I do instead?
You can use a matzah and any cooked dish.
Any, so it just has to be matzah and then something cooked.
Cooked, exactly.
Maybe a vegetable I could have.
Yeah,
like,
correct. Yes, a cooked dish.
I can't think of things.
Whatever.
It's so hard to think.
Right, right, correct. Matzah and a bowl of quinoa. There you go. All right. So, any questions? Now, again, if you have a question, you can always email me. You can always text me. You can always get me on the WhatsApp. I like to get it on the WhatsApp. It's one-stop shopping. Now, let me know, is there interest next week? I'm thinking as an idea. You tell me. again, I'm trying to think practical here. Like, again, assuming you're doing this for the first time, to run you through, and I might do it together with Marie, run you through how to run a kitchen for Yom Tov and Shabbat. Like, but we'll do it in the kitchen.
Yeah, that's okay.
I'll
find value from that.
Yes, please.
Yeah, just practically, what you can do, what you can't do, what are some leeways? Just take you through it, okay? How you should organize it. It's like a seminar in my kitchen.
No, I think it's a great idea.
All right, guys, I need direction from you. I'm looking to be a resource for you to help you guys. It's an unusual year. And if that's going to be helpful, we'll do it next Wednesday, 8 o'clock, same time, same everything. Okay?
There we go. Something we never would have gotten had we had class only in person.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. And I will.
Rabbi, I do have a theoretical question.
Good.
We're dealing with a lot of shortages, ranging from TP to all kinds of other food products and cleaning products and things like that.
Yes.
That could create some shortages. Let's assume for a moment a worst-case scenario. A lot of people never thought we'd be in the situation we're in right now.
Yes.
Let's say you can get some of the basics for your Seder plate, or you can't get some proper food for it. Is there flexibility? Has there been any discussion that it's like Ashkenazi could potentially accept kibbutz this year because it is such an unusual circumstance if they're not able to get adequate supplies of other things? I'm just, again, theoretical at this point. But, is there flexibility across traditions?
The short answer is yes. Well, in two ways. First of all, again, everything I mentioned, look, minimalistically, you want to have wine for the four cups, you want to have matzah for the matzah, and you want to have mar for the mar. And if you can't get stuff for the Seder plate, if that could, let's just theoretically that would work out, okay, you're Yotze, but you tell the story, you did the mitzvah. Remember, our attitude is, I want to get on base, and after I'm on first, I want to go to second. If I'm at second, I want to go to third. Now, as far as provisions, historically, just tell you some Jewish history. As you guys are all familiar with, the Ashkenazi community around the 1400s accepted upon themselves not to eat certain beans and legumes and things that were either got mixed in with grains or look like grains, and that custom has been with us the last 600 years. Now, during the Holocaust or leading up to the Holocaust, there was a shortage of food. So in that case, they needed to eat beans and all these different things. So they did. But what I understand is that I work by day with the OU. There's a robust amount of kosher food. Obviously, you have to be able to get it, but that's that. So you do your best. I just want to make sure to remember, kidney oat is not chametz. Our Sephardic brethren will be eating rice at the Seder. They will be having beans at the Seder. Okay? Now, we follow our Ashkenazic. We are proud of our Ashkenazic customs. We follow our customs. But again, if it's an extreme hardship, then we don't. Now, that's the basic answer. You can't just say, well, I don't feel like ordering it. You can't just do it. You can't, knock it off. But in general, there have been times because of the situation got extreme where the Ashkenazi community did eat a kidney out during basically famines. And it was times like the Holocaust, obviously, running up to the Holocaust, where there are massive shortages. But there are not shortages. The question is, can you get the stuff? So that's going to be, that's a problem that you're going to face every day. You have to eat every day. So the question, how are you going to solve that? So that's...
Along the same lines, one of the rabbis up here in Rockland County had sent out an email to his congregants. I did not personally see it. It was only relayed to me by somebody who is connected with that synagogue. And it basically said that things that we would normally do, like, koshering, certain pots and things like that, toifling, things like that, have to be avoided right now for health and safety reasons. Any suggestions or any comments on that issue?
Yes. So the problem is not koshering, because koshering can be done in the safety in your home. In other words, you can take a pot, make sure it's not used for a day, and you could take your silverware that you would normally use, and you can kosher it. You don't need... The problem is, if you buy a new pot, pan, vessels. You have before you use it, you have to tovel it. Now, in many communities, they have shut down because of medical concerns the mikveh for the to tovel it. So, if you live near a body of water, the Hudson River, the ocean, and you can tovel it because those natural bodies of water are a mikveh. Now, if not, there are legalistic workarounds, which basically means that you can have a non-Jew own it and you are borrowing it for the time, and therefore the obligation to tovel it does not exist. And that's the and that's that if you want to do that, I might post it on my WhatsApp chat of how to do that if you're in a pinch. Okay?
So, you will also include like toasters and kettles, things like
right,
that.
Right. So all those things I want to clarify. Tovling means that if I have a brand new vessel.
Oh, sorry, not tovling.
Koshering? Right. So I will forward the MJE Pesach guide, which it takes you through all these things step by step. They just came out with their 2020. If anybody wants to join, anybody who's on WhatsApp wants to join my WhatsApp group, I'll post there. I'll send that in the email as well. So I'll put that in there, plus the MG guide, plus all the other offerings.
Burning chametz, considering we live in apartments and you're not allowed to get together socially.
Right. So the answer is I don't think if you cannot do it safely in your home, which you know the custom was only to burn a kazayit, 1 ounce of challah, 1 ounce of bread. So if you can burn that in your if you could burn that, you wrap it up with tinfoil and put it in a broiler, you know, and you burn it, you could fill that way, or you just flush down the toilet. It's physical destruction. So you'll take a half a slice, you'll take a slice of bread, chop it up little pieces, and you flush it down the toilet, and that's the best you can do. Again, this is not the ideal year. We're DIYing it in every way. Okay.
But don't say the bracha in the restaurant.
Yeah. So we don't say a blessing. The blessing we make on destroying chametz, we say the night before when we're searching for the chametz, and then we make the declaration of nullification that I'm not interested. All the chametz that I may own is ownerless, like the dust of the earth. And then we make that declaration again after we burn it in the morning or get rid of it in the morning. I will also send you ways to sell your chametz online. There are a lot of ways to do that. Chabad, of course, has it. CRC has it. MG is doing it. We could do that. You could do that online. So again, we typically, ideally, like to do it with a kinyan, like with an actual. Remember, the rabbi, you're not selling the chametz to the rabbi. You're just giving the rabbi power of attorney to sell your chametz. In other words, he's not buying your chametz. You're giving the rabbi power of attorney to sell chametz on your behalf to the non-Jew. Typically, all the chametz in New York is sold to a couple of non-Jews. That's it. They own everybody's chametz. That's that. Any questions whatsoever?
Bye-bye.
All right, Shana, you're on.
Day of the first Seder, in this case, Wednesday during the day.
Yes.
After the time to no longer eat chametz, but before the Seder.
Yes.
Obviously, we can't eat chametz, but is it... You have to eat things that are specifically kosher for Pesach?
Yes.
Or can you eat, like...
So according to this, my chart in West Hempstead, on Wednesday morning after 10:45 a.m., you cannot eat any not kosher Passover food. Many allow kidney oat until the Seder, so you could have things made out of corn. You know, you can get a Slurpee. Okay, whatever. You could have, you know, things that have corn syrup in it. You could have kidney oat items, rice. There are those who do that. Some don't do that at all. The challenge is you can't have matzah and you can't have chametz. So what do you eat? So I'll just tell you what the Rosenthals eat. So my wife makes And it's not going to help for the vegetarians and the vegans in this. They're going to have to vegetarian. That was a separate challenge. But you can have basically for vegetarians, you could have basically kugels, you know, potato kugels. We typically have that hot dog, you know, surrounded by the I don't know what you call that. Surrounded with hot dogs, surrounded with
pastry.
Not pastry, but potato, mashed potatoes, sort of like a pigs in blanket kind of, but without the you know, pastry. You have, you know, and you have yogurts. You could have you know, salad, coffee, quinoa.
Vegetables.
There you go. Vegetables.
Which are good for your immune system, and everybody should be eating way more vegetables now than they've ever eaten in their entire life.
There you go. So that's it. So you can, there's all kinds of stuff. But could go online. This is the old era Pesach what to eat problem is a classic problem, and every family has their own little hack to solve that. So people like to have kugels. People like to have, you can have, you know, if you want to eat meat, you can have meat for those who eat meat. You could have grilled mushrooms, delicious, all kinds of stuff. So that's the deal. Any questions?
No, I do have a request for everybody. I'm putting a name in the chat here. This is Bodhi's dad. You guys know Sam Bodenheimer.
Yeah. Shlomo Zalman Ben Chaya Ruza.
His dad is very ill with coronavirus right now, in critical condition. So if you could all just keep that name in your prayers.
Yes, we'll do. Okay. That's Shlomo Zalman Ben Chaya Ruza. That's Bodhi's father. I, unfortunately, my wife lost her aged cousin, Rabbi Rami Cohen, who was also it was in Times of Israel. He gave an address at the 75th liberation of Auschwitz, because he survived Auschwitz. He wrote a book on his travails during the Holocaust called The Youngest Partisan, and he died of coronavirus this week, 91 years old. Yeah, very tragic.
I read the article this morning. May his neshama have an aliyah, memory beautiful.
Yeah, he was just a fantastic person. He did a bris milah to two of my sons, and he's just a prince of a gentleman, and to lose him to coronavirus is just extremely painful. All right, any Pesach questions?
No.